Hello and welcome to the Poetry Exchange. I'm Fiona Bennett.
And I'm Michael Schaefer. Lovely to be with you, Fi. To be with you in the flesh, as it were.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Wonderful to see you. We've not seen each other since lockdown.
Well, yeah, since like February or something, I think.
Before lockdown.
Yeah, and it's just... Well, we're all saying it, aren't we? Those of us that are managing to get a bit of time and space in the same space together and beginning to do that, it just makes you feel in 3D all of a sudden.
I'm able to look you in the eye and as opposed to looking at you through a computer screen. And it's much better this way, Fi.
Yeah, and it's not just the visual, the acoustic as well. I'm much preferring hearing you this way than slightly delayed on a slightly unreliable line.
Yeah.
So that's all good, isn't it?
It is, it's really good.
Yeah. So, it's September. It's, it's a really, really full-on time for everybody, isn't it? And listeners, wherever you are, I'm sure you're managing and juggling all sorts of things. I'm very aware from some friends of mine who have children in their lives of the back-to-school scenario, which in a light-hearted way we might say was a joyful sense of thank goodness we don't have to homeschool anymore, but in a slightly more serious way also is coming with its own challenges. But it is. It's back to school.
And things are opening up in different ways and in kind of slightly new forms. And, you know, I've got bits and bobs of filming work starting to happen and auditions coming in again. And it is that sense of going, oh, right, we're going again then. Mm. Okay.
We can do some things.
Yeah.
So we've got lots of things coming up in the autumn. It's National Poetry Day in the UK on October the 1st. And we're going to be doing some open call exchanges. We're going to be doing those online, I think. We'll say a bit more about that at the end. But we are also having conversations with various friends and partners and venues about when we might be able to be in residence somewhere lovely in a physical space to meet some people and have some conversation live and in person.
And we have got a very, very special guest coming up in October. To kind of celebrate National Poetry Day. So that's one to look out for. Not to say that this month's guest is any less special. They are quite an incredible person, Fi. Do you want to talk a bit more about them?
Well, it's just wonderful, isn't it? We're going to be hearing a conversation that we had with Varney Cappeldeo, and they joined us online. It was a Zoom moment from where they were in lockdown, which was Trinidad, in fact. But what was actually really wonderful about Varney was that we did this set of exchanges in partnership with the National Centre for Writing, who know Varney well. And we got our list of people who would be coming to us on the Zoom calls. And there was Varney's name, which was really a surprise and a delight for both of us. Forward Prize winning poet, Carcanet published, phenomenal scholar. And I'm hesitating around this word scholar. They most certainly are absolutely that. And what I love about Varney and what we found, and I hope our listeners will find in the conversation, that it's that kind of ultimate dream of scholarliness, which is that it's a scholar of the human condition and the craft of literature in relation to that in a very heartbeat, heartfelt way.
And it's combined with this fantastic wit, I think, as well. I found Varney to be really funny. The conversation really brightened my day. And, of course, they are Trinidadian-Scottish, most extraordinary combination. And you can hear that in the voice. It's quite an accent. Sometimes you hear bits of Scottish and sometimes you hear bits of Trinidadian. It was an online exchange, so just to say that the sound quality is not quite as good as sometimes it can be, but you will be hearing the most extraordinary selection of birds in the background that were singing merrily away in Trinidad.
So I think, we're at risk, Michael, of preempting what will be, I'm sure, absolutely what it will be for our lovely listeners.
Absolutely.
So let's go straight there. So you'll be hearing myself and Michael talking about Spring and Fall by Gerard Manley Hopkins, the poem that's been a friend to Varney. Hello.
Hi.
Wow.
Hi.
Are we hearing a kind of dawn chorus?
Yes, I mean, it's a little bit after dawn. It's just after 6 in the morning.
What sort of birds are they?
They're all sorts of birds. They're wild parrots, kiskadees, and bear-eyed thrushes. Trinidad is a great birding destination.
Wow.
Varney, would you mind reading the poem out loud for us?
I'll do the caveat that, one, I haven't done my breathing exercises, two, that my accent is all over the place. Jared Manley Hopkins, Spring and Fall, to a Young Child. Margaret, are you grieving over Golden Grove unleaving? Leaves like the things of man, you, with your fresh thoughts, care for, can you? Ah, as the heart grows older, it will come to such sights colder by and by, nor spare a sigh, though worlds of wanwood leaf meal lie, and yet you will weep and know why. Now no matter, child, the name, sorrow's springs are the same. Nor mouth had, no, nor mind expressed what heart heard of, ghost guessed. It is the blight man was born for. It is Margaret you mourn for.
Brilliantly read, Varney. Thank you. Quite nice listening to it with the birds in the background.
It's fantastic.
Yes, that was why I chose it, really, even though it can seem like not the most upbeat of poems. I read it when I was a child. In this environment, this is the house I grew up in, and the only house I've consistently come back to. The carpet in this room is 2 years older than I am, and so are the bookshelves. and it was reading it in this environment with leaves falling and birds singing that made the poem come alive in a more positive way.
So you said that you first encountered it as a child?
Yes. Yes, that's right. I'm from a very bookish family, which is interesting because my grandparents on my mother's side didn't have good access to the English language. But my mother's parents still believed in learning. They had 4 girls and 4 boys, and they sent all of them to school and to tertiary education, which was really unusual because Trinidad is a very macho society. There's still a great gender division, where women are not necessarily expected to be as educated or to use their education. So my mother went to a Dominican prep school and then to a convent school in Port of Spain. So she was in both places exposed to a lot more singing and poetry.
So was it your mother that read you this poem first?
No, it wasn't, actually. My father was a poet and he wrote a lot of children's poetry, but neither of them read very much to me, because I have an older brother who's 4 years older, and between watching him and watching Sesame Street, I taught myself to write by the age of 2. And then I used to pester my parents a lot, who never censored my reading. And I used to climb in the bookshelves, the literal bookshelves you can see behind you. I climbed them like a climbing frame and took everything down, including my father's old law books. And my parents taught me how to use a concise Oxford dictionary, basically to get me out of the hair. And I found a book by Jean Kerr, who was an excellent playwright. And there was a book by her called Penny Candy, published in 1970, 3 years before I was born, that had already fallen apart by the time I read it at the age of 6 or so. And she quotes the entirety of Jared Manley Hopkins' Spring and Fall in a scene where her family is reading poetry together. And I think one of her sons reads it and she begins to weep. And so I didn't encounter this in one of the poetry anthologies we had knocking around. I encountered it as a poem already in conversation, something that a family could read to each other, and also something that a child could read to a parent and make the parent reconnect with some truth of experience that reconnects them to that spring of immediate feeling.
There's a poignancy, isn't there, all the way through?
Yes, and I mean, I know that if I showed this poem, for example, to my mother. She'd probably say, in her extremely 18th century rational way, which was her specialism, why would you look at a child and say something like that? It's a terrible thing to look at a young child playing and tell her about sorrow and blight and mourning for herself. And there's a point into that, but I also see it as loving a person's whole life. So looking at a child and projecting forward the time when the child is older, as I am, and they do have regrets, and then loving the whole fulfillment of a person from the moment of bounding innocence through the later times. And I think for Hopkins, there was something plant-like or tree-like about human being.
Yeah, that's really brilliantly expressed. And it's that sense where the meaning of the poems is kind of tied up in the music and the song of it. It's still something I struggle to get hold of sometimes. So when I first looked at this poem, I sort of found it quite hard. And I was going, oh, gosh, what's happening there? What does it mean when he says, for example, you with your fresh thoughts care for, can you? I didn't understand the question. I was going, hang on, what's the can you?
I've just been doing some workshops on reading for silence or reading for spaces with students at the University of York. And for me, what's really interesting with the can you is that at the end of a line, and there's a question mark. So the voice raises or the face raises. You look for connection. It's a moment of connection, a shared moment of both doubt and hope. And then you move around. If you're old enough like me, you think of the carriage return on a typewriter, and you get to the start of the next line and you have ah with an exclamation mark. Now, ah is very interesting. I think Hopkins is exhaling on the ah. He is creating that moment of soundless connection in the poem, soundless in the sense of alinguistic. There's not a word with a meaning, but soundful or songful, in that he is infusing us with something that cannot be expressed. So when he talks just two lines down, nor spare the sigh, he's actually had a sigh in the ah. And also with the alliteration, the such sights, the spare a sigh, he's created a sigh in the sounds that he makes you emit with your voice if you're reading loud as we do. And he's put the sigh as the ah, and then moving a few lines further down, he's got sorrow's springs are the same. So the sighing sounds return with the sing, springs. There you have air and water, because springs are not just the jumping movement, it's also the welling up of a source. And it's also, of course, the season of spring. But sorrow springs, air and water, and the sighings. And then no mouth had, no nor mind expressed. He's already enacted that inexpressibility, that expressive ineffability in the ah. So the whole poem is doing this breath for you. So it's not locking things down, it's moving them along.
Finally, I want to take us back and in a way specifically your sort of personal meeting of it, and then also maybe you could tell us a little bit about the ways in which it has shifted and changed for you throughout your life, from meeting it at really quite a young age to now.
Yes, well, I mean, when I was young and I read it as a child and spoke about it to no one for many years, I was convinced it was a very local poem, because unfortunately the maximum security prison here is called Golden Grove. And so Margaret, are you grieving over Golden Grove and leaving? I thought it had something to do with people in prison. So I thought it was local. And the other thing is that the local trees really do fall. Although this is a tropical country and people think perhaps of everything being endlessly green, we have a particular kind of tree called the pui, P-O-U-I, and the tree loses all its leaves. So my first relation to the poem was I mistook it for something local, but then it made me do something that Hopkins would appreciate, I think, which is to look in a way of praise at the particularity of nature surrounding me. And then there was a resonance to the poem, you know, the sound of the poem, which made it easy for me to memorize. This poem affected me more like music. So I could say it when I was doing the washing up, for example. Then after my grandfather died, my father's father, who had the library of many rare books collected at great expense from travels, my grandmother didn't let anyone have the key. And then I thought I should go into the library, should ask her for the key and see what's happening. But the sad thing was the books had fallen apart such that you couldn't even tell that some of them were books. They were like autumn leaves. They were thick, like leaf trash. And I was able to grieve for it through Hopkins. He uses this word, which isn't a real word, through worlds of wanwood, leaf meal, lay. Now, what is wanwood, W-A-N? One, of course, goes back to Old English and is of uncertain etymology. But then when you get to the 13th century, it definitely means something pallid or livid. One, W-A-N. And it's that pallid, livid sense, which now we have, you know, in the sense of somebody looking greenish, wan, pale, needing smelling salts, about to pass out. So one word, leaf meal, lay, came back to me when I saw my grandfather's ruined books. They had the feeling of decay, and they gave me a beautiful vocabulary for mourning. It was interesting to me to see, for example, Ted Hughes being described as a muscular poet, but I think Hopkins is a muscular poet. He went ice skating on ponds when he was in Wales. And I think that feeling of the blade catching the ice and the danger again of a happy fall you get in the Windhover, there's a lived embodiment to the lines. And here he used to climb trees when he was a child, because one of the areas he lived in was a forested area as a child. And I think you couldn't write like this about a child in Golden Grove, you know, the non-prison Golden Grove, if you hadn't climbed trees, that this is a tree climber's poem.
Finally, am I right in saying that you described this as a, for you, as a sort of joyful poem?
Yes.
And there's one phrase in there that I wanted to pick up on, where it talks about what heart heard of, which I think is brilliant. And it made me think, I wonder, for you, Varney, what it is your heart hears.
What I hear is the goldenness and the green. It's the sense of that recurrence and the endless springing of life. Whatever you might be feeling at an emotional level, there is a deeper movement of living in which you're involved. There's a recurrent pattern of refreshment, the idea of refreshing the mind by repeatedly leaving the page, the pencil, the pen, and going back and looking and looking and looking at the cloud or the leaf or the running water, was how he apprehended that vitality in which we share.
That's brilliant. Thank you, Varney. I hope it's not too reductive to ask you the question that we like to ask everybody, which is to say, if this poem were a friend to you, what kind of a friend would it be?
I think it would be a friend that wouldn't require me to have brushed my hair, and which wouldn't look at me when it was walking along in the woods beside me, because Dorothy Richardson, I think in her essays collected in Journey to Paradise, talks about not looking directly at somebody. And what is fascinating for her is the idea of sitting next to someone, even if you're at a table, and sharing a perspective on the world, noticing different things, but still being in, literally inhabiting a shared view. So that's the kind of friend this would be, to be walking along beside me, not caring to brush my hair, and not looking at me, to probably be waving its arms around and pointing things out. People would be staring at it and wondering if it was drunk. It wouldn't be, it would just be happy. Even though it might have missed a night's sleep, it would be happy.
Gerard Manley Hopkins, Spring and Fall. To a young child. Margaret, are you grieving over Golden Grove unleaving? Leaves, like the things of man, you with your fresh thoughts care for. Can you?
As the heart grows older, it will come to such sights colder by and by, nor spare a sigh, though worlds of wanwood leaf meal lie. And yet you will weep and know why. Now, no matter, child, the name, sorrow's springs are the same. Nor mouth had, no, nor mind expressed, what heart heard of, ghost guessed. It is the blight man was born for. It is Margaret you mourn for.
That was Michael with the reading there of Spring and Fall by Gerard Manley Hopkins.
Something very lovely, Fee, about we had this conversation with Varney in the spring and we're releasing it in the fall.
Now that's what I call curating your podcast episodes, Michael. Amazing. It's beautiful, isn't it? It certainly is a seasonal feeling thing. Wonderful.
And enormous thanks to Varney Cappeldeo for being so generous with their time and for that wonderful conversation. We'll post a link in the notes to Varney's page on the Carcanet website and you can find all the details of their publications there.
And I really encourage people, I think I probably always say this, but particularly in this case, I feel going directly from that conversation about Gerard Manley Hopkins as a source of inspiration and as something that's flowed through their writing to then read their own poems, I think is really a treat, actually. And I did that just not long after we had that conversation and something new came through to me off the page.
Oh, so that's great.
Yeah, really encourage people to do that.
Yeah. So, Fee, we mentioned briefly before the conversation that National Poetry Day is coming up on October the 1st, and we are going to be doing 2 days of online exchanges, these conversations, and people can book slots to talk about a poem that's been a friend to them. So I believe they do that through the website. It's poetryexchange.co.uk. And if you have a poem that's been a friend to you and you'd like to talk to us about it, we'd love to hear from you. Go onto the website and book a slot.
It's great, isn't it, Michael? Because we've actually just today been looking at all the poems that we finally got around to doing a bit of housework on the on the archive, at least on one part of it anyway. And there we are with 303 pages or something and 250 or so poems. So it really, just to give people that sense that there's something being gathered there. And it's extraordinary how diverse those poems are, actually, and how, you know, there aren't neither poets nor poems that keep coming up. So whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever the poem is that's been a friend to you, do get in touch and let us know.
Some of our friends, some of the friends of the Poetry Exchange, have got some work coming out for you. Do you want to just talk about that briefly?
Yes, I do. We're really blessed, actually, aren't we, with, you know, some fantastic poets, contemporary poets, whose work we enjoy in both in the doing of the work that we do with them, but also in reading their work. So Victoria Field's A Speech of Birds came out earlier this year. Absolutely beautiful collection. And coming up, Andrea Witsky-Slott's A Ministry of Flowers, which is coming out with Valley Press, I think. But we'll maybe put a couple of links to those. And also Sarah Solway, I believe, has some fiction coming out as well with Valley Press. So there's all sorts of things coming up. And those are, I think all of those people, you'll have heard their voice along the way in the work that we do. So to find out more and read their work, do go and have a little explore and find them out if you don't know them already.
That's right. We've actually sort of gathered friends as we've gone along making the podcast and doing this project, haven't we, Fee? And it's really lovely. There's a sort of a community of people that kind of hover and congregate around the Poetry Exchange, and we've done some kind of Zoom poetry readings with this sort of community. It's been a really great thing.
So We'll be back next month in the month of National Poetry Day with another differently cracking episode, hopefully. And yeah, we'll really look forward to bringing that to you then. Until then, thank you for listening.
That's brilliant, Varney. I want to come and attend your lectures, please.
I hope you will come to York. We have a wonderful campus with a lake, with waterfowl, and we have all been fantasizing about biscuits. I'm glad you're talking about biscuits earlier. I often tell people, you know, if you meet me in this sort of situation, I seem to be articulate. If you meet me in person, I'm a silent animal that can be won over with walks and biscuits, quite a dog-like, really.